Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Today on Conscious Curiosity SD, we have an educator, global change maker, and social impact leader whose work has transformed communities worldwide. Paula Cadero, welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Jeff.
Paul is a Dan Meyer Distinguished Professor of Global Leadership and Education in the Kraak School of Peace Studies. For 17 years, Paul has served as the Dean of the School of Leadership and Education Sciences at USD before taking her expertise to the global stage, working in international development, training, and research. She's lived and worked in Venezuela, Ghana, Rwanda, and Spain, advising NGOs, foundations, universities, and ministries of education and leadership, curriculum development, and social entrepreneurship. Very busy woman. From serving as VP of Education of Edify, supporting independent schools in 13 countries, to chairing multiple influential boards, including the Burnham Center for Community Advancement and the Conrad Prebys Foundation, Paul is a powerhouse of philanthropy, education, and impact investing. She's also an accomplished author, a sought-after keynote speaker, and a fierce advocate for women entrepreneurs and social change. Paula's passion for education and leadership has no borders, and today she's here to share her journey, insights, and thoughts on the role of business in community. Paula, you ready to dive in?
I am. I'm excited to be here, Jeff.
You've done a lot of things.
Thanks.
So here's the big question. Why? What's the story behind Paula? How did you get into this business?
Yeah, so I've been an educator all my life. I was a classroom teacher, school principal, eventually became a professor, and a professor of leadership. So leadership and leadership studies takes you across disciplines. And I always knew that I could prepare people to be superintendents and principals, but they were working in this wider ecosystem. And then when I became a dean, we had programs beyond. We started the nonprofit program in San Diego, master's, PhD. Institute. It was like, how can schools partner with nonprofits? And then as I was getting out into the business community, it was like, whoa, how can schools partner with the business community? And then when I went international, it became so obvious to me. So after I had been dean, one of my advisory board members, very successful business person, he said, how about if I buy your contract from USD and you work internationally in the microfinance world?
Like a pro athlete kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was like, buy my contract.
Really, really. I almost felt like, well, I've got Michelangelo has a patron. Well, Paula Cadero has his patron. Yeah. Nice. So I got to spend 5 years working with what's called low-fee private schools that would get these loans. And in that work, because I was living in those other nations, and I was living like a month in a little bed and breakfast style place or a small hotel, I'd hang out at some restaurant, sit at the bar, have a beer. And I met people, mostly men, mostly mid-career, late career, working in the tech area. And they wanted to enter those countries, but yet they didn't know how to do that necessarily. They only knew the business sector. Well, I knew all the sectors because I was working with the NGOs and working with schools and things. And as I was talking to these folks, they were serving on boards or they may have worked for the companies. They wanted to do it differently. They really wanted to make a difference. And I thought, how can I help them to do what they want to do? And so 5 years within my own work, I was constantly partnering with mostly for-profit businesses that wanted to impact those nations and also look at their own bottom line, of course, but they wanted to have a social impact. And that just broadened my horizons.
Now, these were local business leaders you're running to, or these were folks from...
Both, but mostly from expats. They were U.S., Canadian, Australian, you know, New Zealanders, a lot of people from the Nordic countries.
Right. So kind of what we call the unconscious conscious leader, right?
Exactly.
I want to do something good. I just want to have words they put to it. They're all nice and fancy, like conscious capitalism.
Yeah. And they were mostly mid and late career people.
Yeah.
And they just didn't know how to go about doing it. And as an educator, I had lots of ideas for them.
So what led you to this? I mean, what drove you to do this? Did something happen earlier in your career? Or what made you say, boy, I've got a passion for doing it differently as well?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because I came from a small city in Massachusetts, an immigrant community called New Bedford, Massachusetts. And we had people, it's a port, so we had people from all over the world, ships from all over the world. And it was
Portuguese, kind of a big.
Yeah. And my ancestors.
My college roommate was from there.
Oh, really? Yeah. Huh. All my ancestors were from Portugal, the Azores and things. And everybody I hung out with was their ancestors, their parents, grandparents were from other nations. And here I am in this very low income community, but I'm a little bit of a history buff. And that was the whaling capital of America. It was the richest city in America in the 1820s, 30s, 40s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so they were entrepreneurs, these captains of these whale ships. And the other thing that was fascinating that I learned about those whale ships, and it's the same in the fishing industry, is each of the employees, each of the people who's working on that boat gets a percentage of the profits. So this whole idea, it's not quite employee ownership, but it's connected as a profit sharing. So I grew up in a world of immigrants, lots of new ideas, very low income. How can we get ahead in the world? Surrounded by this entrepreneurial fishing background, whaling.
Everybody's owning their own business, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we know that 99% of businesses in America are small businesses.
Exactly. So when you look at the world and you spend time in the U.S., you spend time outside of the U.S., what's the dramatic difference in regards to leadership? Anything there?
Boy, that's a big question. Only because for years and years, I've taught all these leadership courses. I think in lots of other cultures, leadership is actually more about humility. And you don't have to be the person who is getting all the attention. You don't have to be the charismatic leader out there. And as a result, and I even see this in our community when there are people who are either first or second generation immigrants, and I'm particularly thinking about a colleague who I think is an amazing leader, but he's so humble. And a lot of people don't recognize his brilliance because it was never in his kind of DNA growing up to be out in front of everybody. So that is a difference.
So kind of the American macho, it's kind of like, yeah, you're the guy up front. You're supposed to be the big charismatic, make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And maybe it's come out of the movies or the TV or something like that.
I'm sure that's all played into it. And I think it's all connected to, you got to make the most money too, because you're the boss and you got to make a lot. You got to grow this company.
Right. Grow. That's
all about growth.
Yeah. I was watching a podcast just this weekend. Someone said something about, like, you're talking about in being in Europe. You had a successful restaurant. In the U.S., you have a successful restaurant. That means I got to get three more.
That's right.
We're never happy with just having one successful restaurant, right? We got to grow at whatever cost.
Yeah. And that really goes to our core values. And, you know, I was talking to somebody recently who is in the possibility of a Michelin star out there. Mm. And, you know, he said, I don't want more restaurants. If I can achieve something like this, he's an immigrant.
Have one that's amazing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So all your seeds into this.
And to be content with that. We don't all need McMansions.
Right.
And one of the questions I ask my colleagues, my students, the people I work with is, how much is enough? You know, and we all fall into it.
Oh, yeah.
We all want the bigger house, the nicer car.
Build the moat around my neighborhood and all that kind of good stuff, right? Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, sort of the American model, I guess. That's what we're brought up with, and that's what we're driven to go push.
Yeah.
At a tremendous cost.
Again, it's in the DNA of the history of our nation. Go West, young man. Those books that were written in the early 1800s.
So how are you making that different for the students today? How can you relay this message? It's like, wait a minute, you know, we need to think about our values and what's really important in life. Like, how does the university system help us evolve where we're going?
I actually don't think I'm doing it. I think they're bringing it.
Okay. Better, right?
Yeah. I think they've seen our generation, earlier generations, the planet, you know, how many landfills, how much more space is left in those landfills. And so they are asking the questions. So I've been back at the university about 5 years. The first year when I taught social entrepreneurship, one of the topics, one evening, was benefit corporations and B Corp certification. And I would ask, how many of you have heard of this, you know, form of a business? I'm out of 25 students, maybe one. Fast forward, second year, same question, 5 students. Third year, maybe 15 students. This past fall, they all had heard of benefit corporations. And when I said, give me some examples, they were immediately naming the companies.
They actually knew what it was. Was it just like...
No, they know the B for the certification. They tend to know the difference with different forms of corporations. And these are students whose majors, my students are graduate students. So they're about 25. They did not major necessarily in business as undergraduates. So it's not because...
They're out working at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. They all have, I would say not all of them, but the majority of them have some work experience. And they know that they probably don't want to continue working for that company.
Mm, the one they're at.
Yes.
There's some higher aspirations for something.
They're creative. They're innovative. And they want to address the challenges that our planet is facing.
Do they see themselves more kind of doing their own thing? Is that sort of the culture of that group?
You know, I think when the program was originally created by some of my colleagues, that's what they thought was going to be the majority of students.
Well, the word entrepreneurship makes it sound kind of like,
exactly. But we are social entrepreneurship. So we're not in a business school. So what are the differences? So we get a different student. And that doesn't mean that some of the students in the business school don't come to us, don't take our courses, because they do. But for our students, they probably want to be intrapreneurs rather than entrepreneurs. Maybe 10, 15, 20% of them will go into our social innovation center and do the pitch contest and come up with the ideas and start their own organization. And by the way, they intend to end up starting nonprofits, which is fascinating to me. But I would say most of them...
Going the extreme the other way, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to make any money. That's my goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk about that curriculum a little bit. Maybe even give us a definition of the social entrepreneur. What does that mean? And so if I was in your program, I mean, what happens?
Yeah. So one of the things that we say to them all the time is context is important. So, you know, you have this idea that you are going to improve something environmentally or socially, better things for the employees of the organization. The reality of it is, what is unique in this context or no longer socially innovative here might be somewhere else. So I'll just give a big example. Sure. When I was working in Rwanda, I was working with a 2-year school that was basically a community college for girls. That was an innovation in Rwanda. Not in America. We have community colleges. 100 years ago, a community college was an innovation, a social innovation in the U.S. Mm. So context matters. And is there some new idea? Is there some twist that's going to result in making things better beyond profit? Profit is key. If you don't have profit, you're not going to be able to do some of the other things. But our students are, how can they put a different twist on something is what they're looking at.
Mm. So is this like one class that people take, or is there a whole curriculum?
It's a whole curriculum. It's a whole master's degree. It's 30 credits, and they begin with a social innovation class. They're also in a peace school. So they're looking at, you know, there's two kinds of peace. There's a negative peace, which is the absence of war and conflict. And then there's positive peace, which is building institutions, strong institutions, so that society does have people making progress in human development. And so our program comes from this positive peace perspective. And we talk about how you can build organizations, institutions, whether they're for-profit, doesn't matter where they are on the continuum. We just happen to focus in our program in the middle of the continuum, which are the for-profits that are doing socially good things. But they also take, I teach impact evaluation. You got to be able to measure this. Mm-hmm. We have other courses, and you know some of my colleagues, they teach about, you know, marketing for social change, finance for social change, and then they do a practicum experience. So yeah, they do a consulting project for a company.
Upon graduation or coming out with their master's degree, you're saying they're kind of looking more to line up with a company that exists to actually try and bring these kind of mindset to that company.
Yeah.
It seems to be more of the movement of folks.
They want to work for business for good companies, purpose-driven companies.
So align with a B Corp kind of company and say, hey, this kind of place I want to work. And then how can I continue to expand upon this and build upon this?
Exactly.
Got it. Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your thoughts here? You're kind of describing the two kinds of peace, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we got wars going on all over the place as usual, mm-hmm. and our institutions seem to be in some sort of crisis. So what's Paula's thought here? How are we going to turn all this around?
again, it's young people. And I have to remind myself that all young people are not the students in my class. But I do notice, even, you know, my nieces and nephews range in age from 18 to 25 or so, and they are socially conscious. These are generational differences. So I have an enormous amount of hope. At the same time, and I shared with you that I'm doing this global seminar for these mid-career folks.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
So there are so many people out there, and they could be in the nonprofit sector as well, because as you know, Jeff, when you get a nonprofit that has government contracts, state contracts, 80, 90% of their revenues coming from these contracts and services they're offering, that their hands are not out asking for donations. So even though they're nonprofits, they're in the middle there. They're close to these socially conscious businesses. So we thought we would offer a seminar for people mid-career because they didn't have the opportunities to learn these kinds of things when they got their undergraduate business degree or whatever. And our students, we want them to hire our students, that's clear. But they also don't know where to go. Yes, they can go to a workshop over, you know, offered by some organization that's 2-3 hours long, but they're looking at their supply chain. I met with someone this morning that had been on your podcast, Cindy Lynn. We were just brainstorming, you know, she's one of the participants in the seminar. Long term, you know, her company, this benefit corporation, can play a major role with data analysis to help small and medium-sized enterprises. So we really wanted to look at the people mid-career who need new and fresh ideas from companies in San Diego. We're going to Spain, companies in Spain, and then we're going to Rwanda a few months later, visiting some extraordinary companies that are partnering with government and business.
So what's the idea of taking it international? Why do you see doing that?
Well, and I hope this is the first cohort of many, because we need new and fresh ideas. You know, I've noticed with two of the boards I sit on, with the Burnham Center and with Prebis, that there's been a lot of connections with Jennifer Lassar, who runs a consulting company on housing. She's been taking groups of people to Austria in Vienna, looking at a housing model. There are ideas.
Open up the aperture a little bit, right?
Yeah. And this is why I love it when, whether it's the EDC or the Chamber or whoever it is, goes to other regions of the world, because there are ideas that we need to learn from.
Right. Yeah, it seems like locally we get the news czar of homelessness will come from Houston or wherever,
exactly.
Right? Like, oh, they did it better there or something. And
yeah.
But you're saying like, yeah, but maybe we should think bigger.
Absolutely.
Completely bigger.
I mean, I just posted something on LinkedIn. It was a report from an international agency, works with all the European nations. And it was about Finland and their focus on housing first. So phenomenal ideas. I've taken educators when I was in the K-12 world to Finland to look at their educational system.
Yeah, it's just so beneficial to get out of your bubble.
Right? Yes,
you actually
exactly.
Go see some other things in the world. Like, oh, wow.
Exactly.
Even just meeting the people there. Oh, wait a minute. This isn't what I thought it was based on, you know, watching the news or whatever. So,
yeah. And yeah. I'm hoping the people in our global seminar make some really strong connections. We're going to be going to the north of Spain, to these cooperatives. I think San Diego is ripe for the growth of cooperatives and worker ownership in general. So that's what we're going to look at deeply when we visit these nations.
So let's talk about San Diego. Right. That's kind of my whole thing. Everybody here is from San Diego. This is about business leaders in San Diego. You're involved with Prebis. You're involved with the Burnham Center. So you got a couple of the larger philanthropic sorts of folks tied in with the university. What are we doing? Where are we going? How do we fix this? Because I know, like Grant said, you know, we've got this interesting bubble we live in, right? I mean, we've got a border on one side. We got a marine base, got an ocean, you got a desert. We're kind of like this nice little island. We're big, but we're not too big. Everyone kind of knows each other. So we actually have this opportunity to create kind of a really interesting community if we could figure out how to do that. So you're sitting kind of the precipice of all that. What do you see? Where are we going? How do we start to actually make this community the amazing community it could be?
Well, there's all kinds
America's
of
finest city is maybe not the finest city.
Like, how do
we,
that's right.
How do we actually make that happen?
So you and others are already starting to do this. Just the fact that this podcast talks about business for good, the Better Business Bureau, certified benefit corporations, all of these conscious capitalism, all of these groups are starting to connect, talk together with cause. There's a conference. We need to offer, if you look at San Diego, the greater San Diego, including the border, as an ecosystem. So part of the ecosystem, you have all of these companies. Again, 99% of the companies out there are small and medium size, right? So where do they go to get ideas from, to get support from, et cetera? Well, they can come here to the Better Business Bureau as an example. So the more you partner, the more you network and let people learn from others and connect, that's crucial. You've also had guests on this podcast, people like Sam Mazzeo. So the whole legal, he's a lawyer, right? So he's supporting companies that want to either transition in employee ownership, maybe become an ESOP or become a B Corp, whatever. We need in San Diego to expand the numbers of accountants, bankers, lawyers who understand all of these new forms of business. I was at the co-op conference about a year ago, and so many, and these are smaller, mostly food, part of the Food Alliance, and they were talking about how there was only one lawyer they could go to who really understood co-ops and how to structure a co-op. That's crazy. So we need to build that middle infrastructure. Universities, I think, as part of that middle infrastructure. I had a businessman probably in his mid-50s, who, by the way, has supported our work. But he came to me about 2 years ago and ended up coming to a B Corp event that the school was sponsoring. And he said, I graduated from USD's business school, and I didn't know anything about these kinds of companies. And I remember saying to him, well, what year did you graduate?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. This existed back 25 years ago.
I mean, this is all in this century. I mean, Benefit Corp,
almost
everything.
This decade, quite honestly.
Well, it's no more than 15 years.
Yes.
Have all of these, whether it's an employee-owned certification or B Corp certification. I mean, the only thing certification that ever existed in the last century really was fair trade. Everything else has been since then. So we have a whole group of mid-career, maybe late-career people out there who need opportunities to learn. That's why the university is starting to offer these opportunities. So we get the younger people coming out who are learning about this. We're reaching out to the mid-career folks, partnering, being on podcasts like this, partnering with the different businesses that are trying to be focused on purpose.
Right. That whole purpose thing seems to be a big challenge, right? For the for-profit organizations out there.
Yeah.
It's like, I think there's like a certain crew that like, we get it. We're already kind of doing it. There's some over the other side, we'll never get it. It's just purely profit driven. And there's a whole bunch in the middle that are kind of like a possibility.
Yeah.
And the challenge is how do you get them? You know, like take the COS conference where we're saying, all right, we're going to get more for-profit companies here, but we just are challenged to get them to come. I mean, they're out doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're running their businesses, heads down, making things happen. So how do we make it more attractive for the for-profit business owner? What's your thought?
Well,
that's the million-dollar question.
That is the million. I think together, if we're all having the conversations and we all have the connections, I'll give an example. I'm a little bit of a wine buff. So I go to all these different wineries and I posted a position this morning as a result of a conversation I had with a woman who owns a boutique winery. Come to find out, it's a sustainable winery. It's an organic winery. They're doing so many things that are right. She and her husband run the winery. They have a few part-time people that work with them. How do they have time?
Right. That's the,
that's the challenge, time. Yeah. So I said to her, I said, well, I wrote down the information she gave me. You need a part-time person. Let me post it on my LinkedIn. Let the university post this. So I think the more we can network out there, it's just going to help everybody.
Lend a little hand to everybody, right?
Make the connection
through that. Mm-hmm. I wrote the book Jailbreak Leadership, and that was about discovering your purpose and how do you start to bring that to life at work. And when I came out, that's when I discovered conscious capitalism. So okay. It was like 8 years ago or something now. And I'm like, oh yeah, the world's waiting for me, right? I'm gonna go run around, help all these companies discover their higher purpose, right? The number one tenet of conscious capitalism. That dog does not hunt. I'm gonna tell you right now, I tried that every which way and it just didn't go anywhere. But I'm now out facilitating, doing things like strategic planning and that. Now I get to actually bring it to life in the strategic planning process. And you get in these companies, be it a law firm or whatever, financial advisory firm, they're still about their people and their people showing up and being engaged and excited. It's like, so I ask the owner, what's the bigger reason you're here? Why did you start this company? There's always a story. Mm-hmm. He said, well, that's what we want to lean into. This thing that you were trying to create, not just money, but the thing you're trying to create. And that's what we're inviting the employees into. So I'm finding that you have to kind of come in through the side door a little bit, right?
Absolutely.
Just like, yeah, that purpose thing sounds interesting, Jeff, but my real need is I'm trying to hire a new assistant or something. That's my real need.
That's right. But you're trying to hire a new assistant. Once you do, you need to retain that assistant.
Right.
So what kind of support are you going to provide this person? Because we know how expensive it is when employees leave.
Right.
So I think that there are lots of people. So you get to open the door by having those conversations.
Solving a business problem, right?
Yes.
So employee engagement, retention, those kinds of things, I think are much more. And people want to run great companies. And even when you get in there, you start having those questions, you find out they're already doing great things.
That's right.
It's just like the people of the winery. It's like, they're doing those great things. They probably have the words around it, right? They're not putting big stickers up. Hey, look at what a great job we're doing because we think it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So there's lots and lots of companies doing that. And that's where Cindy Lin comes in, right? Yep. Let me evaluate where you're at. You might be surprised where you are, right?
That's right.
And then you can use that as part of your branding and marketing, and it starts to become a positive. So I think that's the education we need to bring to the party.
And I think the other, we're all impatient, and this is a long game.
It took us a while to get here. So.
It did. it's going to be a couple of steps forward and quite a few back. But the reality of it is, and I'll go back to the landfills, there's no more space in those landfills. What are we going to do with all of the stuff out there that we are polluting this world with? We need to have people, organizations addressing those kinds of challenges.
Yes.
And that is going to be good business.
I thought it was kind of interesting, some of the podcasts I listened to about this latest AI issue with the Chinese coming out with this product that was like equal to what the US has, way cheaper and all this, and how this. And a lot of the people said they were able to come up with it because they had to be innovative because they didn't have all the money that we had. So sometimes, you know, money is the wrong answer for all this stuff too, right? It
Absolutely.
Actually makes you kind of lazy. And
well, I saw that in the international work that I did. Okay. So like, whoa, they're getting really good results at this school. And then I'm going into Southeastern San Diego and they're not getting such good results. So yeah, questioning what kind of resources are really, really needed. Do we need to have the absolute latest equipment, or can we make do with some of the equipment we have?
Yeah, get creative around
things. Yeah, instead, let's pay our employees more. Let's develop their skills even more.
So what is your thought on AI? I think that's going to be a big game changer for us as we're moving forward, and probably going to impact how we're educating our students in the future, right? I mean, jobs are going to look way different 10 years from now than they do today. What's your thoughts on that, Paula?
Well, I think we need guardrails. I think we need to look at the ethical issues. Companies need to be talking with experts out there that understand the risks involved. I think there's enormous opportunity. Again, having said that,
the unintended consequences.
Absolutely unintended consequences. Yeah.
It comes with everything, I think. Yeah. Every great idea always has.
Yeah. And people are going to be displaced. I mean, McKinsey came out with a report that they were basically, we always think it's going to be the absolutely low income person, you know, that's at the front desk reception that's going to be impacted. Yes, that's one person. But I mean, accountants, okay, the highly skilled people in higher education, you know, I mean, it's been a sea change in my career in higher ed. I mean, COVID changed everything for us going online.
Right.
And I had trouble when I was a dean, I had trouble getting people to even think about offering a course online. And now I look at all of our universities that we're all offering online opportunities.
Got to be competitive now, right?
Yes.
That's the only way you can get things done. I understand you're working on a book.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Yeah. So because I've been teaching social entrepreneurship for a couple of years, every year you look at what's a book and there's all these very good but theoretical books. I'm a real practice-oriented person. And I can't find anything to use in the course. And I write textbooks. I've written textbooks for
ask
school
AI.
Leaders.
It'll do it for you.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to be using AI as I've already started using AI to help me with this. There are amazing companies out there that are so innovative, so socially innovative. I want to include them. I'm including expert inquiries in every chapter. So yes, we'll provide frameworks. You're familiar with something called donut economics.
Yes.
And the sustainable development goals and things like the triple bottom line and regenerative economics. Those are basic frameworks that we will be providing. I've invited my colleague Juan Roche to help me with this because he spent his career in business and I haven't. I've come from the nonprofit sector. So we'll give them the frameworks, but then I want every chapter, whether it's on worker ownership or benefit corporations, whatever the chapter is about, to have expert inquiries in there. So we will have at least one per chapter of some company, some organization in the world that is just excelling at whatever it is we're trying to present in that chapter.
You have a great working example of what that looks like in the real world.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Dr. Bronner's, for example,
right.
could be in a B Corp chapter.
We do have some great companies here in San Diego, right? That are examples just like Dr. Bronner's that
know? Yeah, we have more and more companies.
We don't have to go far.
No, yeah. We don't. And I'm trying to learn more. And that's part of one of the reasons I'm writing the book too, is to look at more of our local companies that are doing it and doing it well. And so I'm kind of looking at the biotech, because when we take people to Barcelona, we're looking at pharmaceuticals, biotech, their benefit corporations, they're doing it. So what's here in San Diego for me to learn about?
So it's kind of interesting. I spent most of my career in medical device up in Orange County, and I came down here, and here's this big biotech world, life science going on. I have not connected into that group of people at all.
Yeah.
And it seems like all my little circles of conscious capitalism, the B Corp folks, all these people that we're sitting here talking about kind of doing these are not connected into that. I don't see those folks showing up at our thing. There are events in that. So,
but that's always been a challenge in San Diego. I remember when a colleague of mine was working for Biogen IDEC before they split up, and she was one of the few people, she was a VP, that we could bring to the table when we were looking at education issues. We'd go to the biotech companies and they were busy. Maybe they were busy just growing. I don't know. And part of it, we've worked with Biocom over the years.
Right.
But it's a challenge and I'll get in there somehow.
Are you going to crack that nut?
Yeah, maybe a little bit with the help of folks like you and, yeah, and the other folks.
Let me know. Okay. Let me know who I should be talking to on the podcast here. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Biocom's an interesting organization, right? I mean, they kind of have a legislative kind of arm of them. I was very familiar with them when I was up in Orange County, because they actually were talking about trying to kind of get Biocom into the Orange County area. So yeah, but they're big down here.
Very big.
So it seems like an organization we should be talking to.
Yeah. Well, Joe Panetta just retired, but yes, absolutely.
So what are you optimistic about in regards to San Diego? If you were to fast forward, what could we be celebrating 3 years from now if things went well in our little ideas of having our companies be more participating in all this kind of social improvement, employee engagement?
Well,
what's your thoughts, Paula? Where could we go?
Yeah, two areas. First of all, I'm very, very excited that we have these for-purpose groups that are coming together, conscious capitalism, et cetera.
And we are coming together.
Yes.
I'm actually bringing them together.
Yeah, you are.
I'm committed to, I'm a facilitator, a collaborator. Yeah. So why aren't these people talking?
And it takes people like you,
so
Jeff,
that can
look at 30,000 feet and say, why aren't these groups talking together? And that's a little bit of what a university can do as well. So I'm very hopeful and I will do everything I can with my hat of a university faculty member to promote that work. I also think, you know, having the Prebys Foundation in town is a game changer.
Yes.
So 5 years ago, they basically weren't here. So we have an amazingly talented and visionary CEO.
Yes, Grant Oliphant, who's been on the podcast.
Yes.
Go check it out.
Yeah, I should admit this. That's the one podcast I haven't listened to
yet. Are you serious?
but because I listen to all the podcasts he does. Okay, I will. But I think bringing philanthropy together, a couple of things, to help them to understand in what ways they could support this kind of work. Okay, this focus. And I also think, you know, I sit on our investment committee. And so we look at the 95% of our portfolio, what we are investing in. And I think philanthropy in general, this huge change is taking place that we're looking at mission aligned investments, and including in San Diego, what are mission aligned investments that we might consider?
Well, one of the things I loved about my interview with Grant was that the large philanthropists like them are the long term. They have the longer vision. He says, you know, you can't really expect the government to have that focus because, you know, we're always having our churn of elections and all that. Businesses, like, we're just caught up in the day, quite honestly. We can't even come to a conference, right? Mm-hmm. So he saw that as sort of their responsibility to have that long term vision of what San Diego could be. And Grant's an awesome guy and have great faith. And then we got Tad over at the Burnham Center. And you're tied in with both of these organizations. How'd you pull that off, Paula? You're the uniter.
Yeah, I've known Tad for many, many years. And I think the Burnham Center has an opportunity to do a lot more convening around this kind of work. And so that's part of my goal in 2025 is, as the Burnham Center, how can we help facilitate this work?
I'm looking forward to having lunch with you because I'm all about that.
Fabulous.
Well, believe it or not, Paula, we've kind of went through our time here.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
So what's the big idea? What's the one thing you want everybody to remember?
Oh, boy.
They didn't remember anything else, Paula. What's that one idea?
That we have to collaborate. Two things. We have to listen instead of talk. People who talk a lot are not usually good listeners. Okay. And so we have to listen hard to the people around us and then collaborate with them in the areas that make sense for each of us.
I'm with you on that 100%. I think collaboration is the answer to all of this.
Thank you, Jeff.
Be it locally, be it internationally, right? Mm-hmm. The work you're doing, like taking people outside the country to go see some other things that we can bring back here that can make a big difference. Love the work you're doing. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate you too.
And thanks for being a fan. Now go listen to Grand Hall of Fans podcast.
I promise I will.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, till next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.